Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo. It is myself, Louis Benaventi.
Daniel Childs.
Okay, he's doing it again. I thought he might be like, and it's me, Daniel Childs.
And it's me, Daniel Childs.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, is it Dan? Who are you?
It's me, Childs Daniel.
We're eventually going to get a really smooth intro, but I think for the time being, you're just going to get used to Dan just going, I'm Dan! I actually quite like it, to be honest. It's kind of like, it's rather than seeing Dan all this really like clean stuff he does on Sunday, just like, hi, I'm Daniel Childs, this is this, da 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 da. He just goes, Dan! It's like, yeah, this is the Dan I know, and this is the Dan everybody should know. But we're obviously here to talk.
Straight to the point where, Gen X, all of that stuff, there's no waiting around, just get to the point.
Exactly, because we've got all the brain rot that we see, we have to get straight to the point on podcasts, because like, there's nothing that people can put below the screens, like there's no GTA maps like there is on TikTok. But, you know, we're here to sort of just give you the lowdown on Chelsea's trip to Manchester to face Manchester City in a massive, massive game for Chelsea. An opportunity to hopefully secure a spot a little bit more in the top four race, because Manchester City are breathing down our necks. Dan, are you worried? Because I most certainly am.
I'm a little less worried after seeing how Man City capitulated at PSG. That game obviously took a lot out of them, and I think it exposed and you know, reignited a lot of the concerns that City have had recently. And it was interesting, I had a conversation on a City podcast ahead of the weekend, mainly about Chelsea, but you know, he was sort of talking that the City presenter, David Mooney, was talking about how in midfield they've had real problems, and I think you saw that with PSG. So there's absolutely a chance for Chelsea to win this game. It's just at the moment the performance levels are not at a great place for Chelsea, especially from an attacking point of view, that kind of give you confidence that we can actually take the chances or those opportunities that I think will be there for Chelsea. This is not peak City. This is not the greatest version, the strongest version of Man City we've ever seen. There are clearly holes and there are clearly parts to this team that are not confident, not gelling on the ball. They're very, very poor, very sloppy. And so from an opponent point of view, it's not going to be the daunting trip it used to be. However, some of the performances of our own players I still think are in question.
Absolutely, and we're definitely going to talk more about the game later, of course, but we do have to do the other business of the transfer market and, of course, play our usual little game before we get into properly analysing the Manchester City fixture, because we do want to talk about that capitulation that they had at PSG, and we do want to talk about the side which we can hopefully see go and get a result. But first, in terms of any other business, we've got two big transfer stories, really, and I wanted to talk to you about both of them, Dan. The first one is an outgoing, which makes no sense. Renato Vega, looking like he's going to Juventus on loan for the rest of the season because he wants to play centre-back. He will be returning in the summer. Again, makes no sense. Where's your head at with that? Because I'm a little bit lost, mate.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me we'd let a left-back go without replacing him. That's the first point. You are, well, again, arguably you have Ben Chilwell there, and it's kind of the madness of Chelsea at the moment that there are several areas of the team where either we could obviously recall a player to help us with depth, or Maresca and the club are just refusing to use players that could be of benefit. So if we go by the logic of this season and the way Maresca's used the squad, he isn't going to be using Ben Chilwell more than he has already. So you've weakened your place there. I don't really understand it. This is a guy we only signed 5 months ago, and already he's off, basically, for lack of game time. There's some conflict over, you know, where do you place the blame here, because the player himself has turned around and demanded more minutes. But then I go back to, what was he promised in the summer? Like, what was his perception of the way he was going to be ranked within Chelsea? And that doesn't mean that the player is guaranteed to play every single week, but I think our outside perception of Vega is, given the price tag, given Marco Correa, he was going to be used as a rotational option, and that's how he has kind of been used. So I think, as advertised and as briefed, as a word we like to use a lot on the show, I don't think Vega has been used any differently to what we expected. It's just, I have concerns about just squad depth. for the rest of the season, which in other areas is the case. And, you know, what was the point in signing Vega in the first place, especially when we see links to, I guess you'd argue, more serious or first team left back options?
I think that is definitely the case. I mean, I get the whole situation where everyone's looking at who to blame here. And I think straight away, the names are fairly obvious. I'm going to be very honest. You know, it's not a case of sitting here and going, well, we need to be really careful what we say here because, you know, it could be anybody here. I get Vega wants to get more minutes. He wants to play centre back. The names are very, very obvious as to who's to blame. Okay. I'm just going to put it. I'm not even going to say it. We don't need to. It's right there. There's nothing else to say about it.
Yeah, but Louis, to play devil's advocate, why are you being so negative? Just go and support another club.
I saw somebody say that to you the other day, and I was like, what?
You're not sounding like a Chelsea fan. You know, think of all the horrible Chelsea fans online who don't support the club properly, are too negative. Why aren't you just positive? You sound like you're a rival.
Oh, mate. It's that I was actually thinking about this more and more and more over the past few days. You know, when we said in the previous show that these guys obviously know what they're doing. They're really good, you know, all that sort of stuff. And obviously, in the roles they're doing, we agreed it's not too sure, but they're very good at what they did respectively. We were very balanced when we said that last week. I genuinely think I could do a better job as a sporting director at Chelsea. I'm being deadly serious at this point because there's so many amateur mistakes being made constantly from people you expect in those positions not to make those mistakes. It's ridiculous.
I've made this point before, but I've reached a point now of kind of a little bit more calm about it in the sense that and this is not just like theory out of nowhere. This is based on what I've heard. This is just based on also a growing list of evidence. I think the problem is that some of the counter arguments again just really fall on deaf ears and they just don't make a lot of sense because our frustrations, and I think a lot of people's frustrations, are not based on what the Sun says might happen, that like wild rumors from someone's basement, you know, are just out there to antagonize and, you know, engagement farm and, you know, bait people into responses. My frustration with Chelsea is based on tangible things that have actually happened. And although rumors that are coming out and things that could still happen in this transfer window may happen, may not happen, you use previous evidence to build an expectation of what could happen or what, like, out of a predictability, you know, what could happen going forward. That's why people are looking at the Garnacho links with a lot of skepticism and a lot of concern, because they've seen what the club has already done in the transfer window. They're using their previous eyes and ears to it's just obvious psychology. Like, that's it. It's what, you know, you try and learn from the past. You know, the problem, my frustration with Chelsea discourse a lot of the time, it feels like everyone always has to have the memory. Memory of a goldfish, but I've heard recently that actually that's unfair on goldfish. They actually do have quite good memories. So I knew we need to find them. Who has worse memory than a goldfish? I don't know. But probably some Chelsea fans, because we have to live in like 2-week cycles all the time. Like, we have to forget what happened 6 months ago. And I'm like, no, like, that stuff is relevant. And I've come to the conclusion that if you start from the premise that our transfer business is about making the football team better, you drive yourself insane. If that is your approach, if you logically, which again, I'm going to state this is not me justifying it. This is not me saying I agree with it. I will continue to criticize it whenever I can and call it out for what it is as illogical. But I feel like it's a lost cause at this point if you start from the premise that everything we're doing is by the logic and the end point of making a better football team. Because if you go by that, every decision doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you sign a left winger who's probably worse than everything or kind of the same as everything you've got in that position already? Why aren't you recalling a central midfielder when it's quite clear your midfield depth options are really poor at the moment? Why are you persisting with a number one who consistently makes errors that all of us could see was going to make errors in the summer when you made him first choice over more competent options? The list goes on and on of those decisions from a footballing, like, logic point of view of, as you said, if you were sporting director, your consideration, your probably primary consideration would be, all right, there are some limitations to maybe what we can spend, realistic things and things you can't predict of player injuries and maybe player turning around and saying, I demand more minutes right now and having to deal with those situations. That happens at every football club. But fundamentally, your primary objective would be, how do I make Chelsea a more successful team? How do we make this squad better than it currently is? Unfortunately, I can't look at the current decision makers and feel like that is the primary objective or it's high enough in the decision making process. That, because none of the football decisions make much sense. If that is your starting point, you run into a brick wall very quickly if you just look at what's happened at the club.
But that's what the worrying thing is. Because for me, it's so illogical, but it's a fact they're doubling down at every single occasion they can. You think about when the situation started at Chelsea, you know, when you had these two guys, I'm not even going to say their names because it's pointless even saying it at this point. These two idiots, quite frankly, and Christopher Vell, and it was supposed to be this transfer dream team, right? And very quickly, this dream team fell apart. Clearly, for very obvious reasons, right? Let's call a spade when we see it, right? Clearly, something happened there where somebody wanted to make the team better using a model which they used at previous clubs, i.e. Vivel, Red Bull Network, looking at bringing in players that were only going to get better with better sell-on value, but also would actually make the team a lot better at the same time. And these two, right? And from what you read and from what you hear, people getting... these two have just very much been... I think brown-nosing is the best term to describe it. You know, they brown-nose all the people that they need to brown-nose. They play the political game. Vivel wanted to do his job properly. He ended up going on gardening leave because it wasn't going to work, right? And then now it's a case of these two are just constantly just saying, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir. This is what we're going to do at the club. This is this. And then whenever there's an opportunity to actually improve the team, we don't see it. I think some of the other links, we'll talk about Garnacho in a minute, of course, because we have to talk about that, because that is ridiculous. But Gittens, yeah, he looks good at Dortmund. Is he someone who's going to come in and improve the team straight away? I don't know. You know, there are other players as well that we've been linked with where you sort of look at it and you go, oh, I'm not sure. The one name on the list of wingers where people go, that will improve the team straight away, is Nico Williams. It's the first one you see. When I saw that, I was like, yeah, I love, great. But then you know the money's, it's going to be so expensive that they're not going to do it. So we're going to go, okay, what's the next best option? Somebody who is all right in the Premier League, but we're looking at the fact he scored one worldie and that's it. That's all I've seen posted about Garnacho, is that one bicycle kick. Honestly, it is insane. And the fact, by the way, that Chelsea are talking about they want to have a cohesive dressing room, right? Why would you bring in someone who's actually been left out of a team for leaking lineups, for leaking news to the press?
Is that, I assume that's alleged, right? We have to put that in.
I mean, he was, they United came out and said they left, that's why he was left out at one point. We'll say it's alleged. We'll do more research on it, definitely. But that's why he was left out of 11 at one point.
My issue with Garnacho is that currently, I mean, he's been out of form for some time, and I've watched him not only play against Chelsea, but also just generally his performance levels haven't been that good. And I just always fear that, you know, especially January signings, right? The whole point of January signings most of the time is to bring them in and they have an instant impact. And it was the issue, I think, we had with Mikhailo Mudryk, right? That you buy a very raw player who needs a lot of seasoning, who needs a lot of time and patience. And he's walked into an environment that isn't conducive to that, that isn't going to give him that time. Because you spent a lot on him, the profile of him as a player, this is not a £15 million signing. The price tag was on him. The expectation was there from the start. We've gone through the Mudryk situation. And I think it'd be similar with Garnacho in the sense that you're buying him from Man United, the biggest club in England. So already there's an attachment there. And because it's going to be a big fee, there's going to be expectation on him. Unless he comes into an environment and the new environment at Chelsea brings something out of him that he hasn't had at Man United, the likelihood is the struggles we've seen from him as a player only persist. And he just is added to the clutter, because again, talk about like 2 week memories. We bought Jadon Sancho, a player who from Man United was a struggling winger who maybe could reignite his career at Chelsea. So in some ways it's a similar story. Sancho hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been great.
But he's not been bad, he's not been great, but you've actually seen a better player than we saw at Manchester United. But that's because we also saw that at Dortmund. We've not seen any of that actually. There's a proven track record with Sancho.
But the problem is you've already made that move. Like, if we hadn't have signed any wide players in the summer and we were really lacking in that area, the justification for it would be there. Like, you could justify that, okay, we need depth. And obviously the Mudryk situation plays into this, right? Because if Mudryk is gone for 4 years, Chelsea have to make a serious judgment on that, right? But I'd argue at this point, and this it comes back to why I just think the Garnacho one, the price is insane, the output isn't there, the justification for it, I don't think it's a good environment for him to walk into. I don't think he's a player worth that investment. Is if you lose Mudryk, logically, just in the squad, I just give those minutes to Tyreek George. You know, just give those Conference League minutes to Tyreek George. Give those minutes will be evened out between Madueke, Neto, Sancho, Joao Felix for the rest of the season. Like, that's how you'd use those minutes for me. And because you're in such a condensed window, what were the priorities when we walked into this month? Goalkeeper, I think it was clear goalkeeper was never going to be resolved this month. Central midfield, which has now become a bigger issue, and striker. We've already resolved the centre-back one, really, now. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think the clamour isn't really there as much now for us to sign a centre-back, because you look at the time, we're recording this on the 23rd of January, we're getting very close now to deadline day. So realistically, I think Chelsea can only really sign one player at this point. And where should that money be spent? Because you've got recall options, you've got two recall options in central midfield, I don't think it should be in central midfield. The area everyone and their dog and their cat and their fish has been screaming all month is that centre forward, striker, we need striker options. So why are we going for a left winger in an area we're already quite bulked in? Go back to the first principle, go back to what I started with. Is it a football decision about making your squad better? Why would logically you look in an area where actually you've probably got the best depth in the squad? We're quite bulked actually in wide options, or at least it's been an area where you've kind of been confident there's at least someone to come in and play minutes.
Yeah, but this is the problem. And I mean, you look at the whole situation with the transfers and how Chelsea are analysing it and how they're looking at it. It only boils down to the fact that they can make some profit on some players. And it's flipping. You know, it's really interesting when, you know, we spoke about it last week, and I've been in space, spoke about it as well. Chelsea's strategy of basically going, well, if we're taking a player from you, you're having a player from us, we need to have a player from you in exchange. It's always this constant, it's almost like Pokemon cards when we were kids, or Yu-Gi-Oh, or match attacks. It's like, I've got the 99... black shiny man of the match Cristiano Ronaldo 99 club, I want two of your cards for that. So, well, no, the reason we're doing that is because we keep messing up everywhere else in the market. You know, we look at some of the other links we had. Obviously there was Dusan Vlahovic for about 5 minutes. You know, the Times put that out, and then that was very quickly nipped in the bud by Fabrizio Romano. You know, he turned around and said, no, that's not happening now. But there are other ones as well to look at. You know, I mean, look, in terms of other transfers, Liam Delap, you know, Chelsea been linked with as a striker. Great. Maybe that's why we're looking at someone on the left wing now, because we're looking at getting Liam Delap in the summer. But then at the same time, although I'm not a fan of him, Victor Osimhen right now is potentially being called back to Napoli because Manchester United and Arsenal both want him this window. Two sides, one side really, that we are competing with for top four, to make sure that they can deal with their issue. They're looking to address that their biggest issue now, because that is what January is for. As you said earlier, you do not use January to bring in more raw young players. You look at any Chelsea fan, you speak to any Chelsea fan now, they're looking at it and they're going, we don't need any more of that. You've got great examples of that throughout the team. There are players there which will grow, will get better, but they're only going to get better if they're surrounded by the right older heads which can help nurture them. You cannot leave that just on a manager. It makes no sense. There's big moves as well available. Mateus Cunha. Wolves have said they're happy to sell him. I'd go straight in for that. Because not only would it be a decent player who's got Premier League pedigree and is looking good this season as well, but you can get him a decent price because he wants to leave. He doesn't have long left in his contract. He wants to go. It's staggering that they're going to, rather than looking at players, which, by the way, would cost roughly the same amount of money or less than Garnacho, we're looking to spend £60 million on another winger who doesn't bring, to be honest, anything we don't already have into this side. I don't get it. It makes no sense to me, man.
Well, it doesn't. And I think, do we want to briefly, before we get to the Man City game, I've noticed over the past week, since the Chalobah recall, but I think it's really started to heat up and get even more intense. And the Wolves game didn't change this. Even winning a game didn't change this. Actually, the Chalobah performance only has accelerated this, because I think it only exposed a lot of the problems along with Sanchez's error in that game. The continuing turn against the sporting directors by people who I think were very sympathetic to them. I've seen a radical shift, like an overwhelming number of people now who have got to a position where I was in the summer. Have you noticed that? Am I sort of over-egging it? I mean, we know football's fickle, right? We know if we beat Man City on Saturday, everyone, including us, will be over the moon, because that winning at City is always one of the biggest wins you can have in a season. But I'm still a believer in principles. Like, even if we win on Saturday, my frustrations on the sporting directors aren't going to turn around. Like, one game shouldn't change that. Or is there actually now a substantial turn that is there and is going to remain, even if Chelsea have a positive result at the weekend and suddenly turn around their form again?
There's a substantial turn, absolutely. Whether or not that's actually going to have an impact is another question entirely. You look at how the club have listened to fans, obviously through the medium of social media. You know, they have listened to fans in certain contexts when it benefits them, right? When it's to look sexier. I mean, João Felix, when he signed in the summer, is a great example of that. You had people all over the internet going mad that why didn't we keep João Felix and all this sort of rubbish, right? And then we get a he's coming home video, only if it's potentially be flogged to AC Milan this window because we didn't need him, right? Because the club know and how to spin the PR in terms of when it's positive. When it's negative, they don't listen. They don't. It's the continuous need for these guys to be like, no, we're doing the job. We talked about it last week. Look at who we nearly signed. It's this whole spin where they try and make themselves look good, right? And you and I saw through this from 2-3 windows ago. In fact, I saw it as soon as I spent money on João Felix. I put it to the side because I thought, do you know what? When I say spend money on João Felix, I'm talking about the very first window, by the way. We got him on loan for 12 million quid. You know, I kind of, well, maybe that's them maybe being a bit naive. Hopefully they'll improve the next window. They didn't. They didn't the window after. I'm sorry. Like, Benedek Bali, because he's the one who's in charge of all this now. It's not Topoli. He's not stupid. He's made billions. He's a hedge fund manager for a reason, right? It's basics here, lads. It's just basics that they can't get right. And that's what really, really jars a lot of fans. And I think a lot of people finally started to come and smell the coffee, because it's embarrassing. Gittens, again, I don't know enough about him to sit here and say whether or not he'll be an amazing player for Chelsea if he does sign. He's looking less likely, and it looks like Garnacho is potentially more likely. Hopefully Napoli actually do us a favour and sign him before we get to him, because that would be absolutely fantastic. Because it saves us our blushes, I think. But
isn't it mad that, like, we're at a position now where we're begging other teams to buy players that our club wants to sign, because we're like, please, like, we're not, save us from the stupidity. I almost think that as much as you want the transfer window to be a saving grace or somewhere where you can rectify your issues, I think it's quite notable that transfer windows have now become a place where the way Chelsea work, the sporting director's strategy, is most exposed and it's most chaotic. You know, this is where sporting directors are supposed to make their money. This is where they're supposed to be hailed as geniuses, as I'm sure the Chelsea sporting directors currently would like them to be viewed as by Chelsea fans and the public. And they're actually at their best, or they're the height of their reputation is when actually there's no transfer window, like a few months ago, when the team's playing well, everyone's just focusing on the football. But the moment we hit a transfer window, everything blows up again. I think that's quite informative as well.
Mm. When was Chelsea's last good window? I'm talking Abramovich era as well. Because I'm thinking there was a stint, which was the summer 13-14, the winter 13-14, and 14-15 were summer. That little gap.
The summer of... Yeah, I mean, the summer of 14-15, undeniably, I think is one of the best we've had in a long time. Because that was a summer we... Mostly because we bought Diego, but we also bought Fabregas. We also bought in Remy, who I think did a job as a rotational backup for Costa, who got injured. That was the summer we brought back Thibaut Courtois, who then transitioned into the first choice from Petr Cech. The summer before we won the title under Conte was pretty good, if you think about it. You know, we brought back David Luiz. We brought in N'Golo Kante, one of Chelsea's greatest ever signings, for, what was it, 32 million? I'm always staggered how low it was, but it was mad for N'Golo. Marcus Alonso was bought that summer. Michy Batshuayi was bought that summer as well. I feel like, arguably, actually, the transfer ban summer was probably one of the best ones we've done in recent years, because we didn't sign anyone, but it brought through a load of good academy players. Because the summer of 2020, although at the time we were all very excited by it, barely anyone from that summer survived and actually proved to be brilliant. So yeah, it's been a long time since we've had a successful transfer window. And what I mean by that is not the hype of people, of us winning the transfer window at the end of a transfer window. Actually, in reflection, you look back at that transfer window and you go, wow, like, that really upgraded our options. There have been obviously individuals throughout that. It's not fair to say it's been all rubbish, because even in recent years, we've signed Cole Palmer. I think we signed Moises Caicedo, who I think individually has been pretty good this year. We've signed players that on their own, I think, have been good, but transfer windows where you actually look at it and go across the board, that was a percentage win rather than loss. I think it's difficult. Even the summer we bought Cole Palmer, there's a lot of signings within that summer that are still concerning. People disagree with me because it will be like really petty and kind of childish, but I almost think that Palmer was not by design. You know, we stumbled onto Cole Palmer. I don't think Palmer was if Palmer didn't play for Man City, and I know this sounds like a lazy hypothetical, but I feel like that's the reason we signed him, was because he played for Man City. He was in the academy and he had connections to Joe Shields. I don't think we signed him because someone went, Jesus Christ, like, this world-beating generational talent could be signed here for 40 million and we could do one of the deals of this club's history, which is what Cole Palmer is. And the sporting directors can claim success for that all they want. But I don't believe it was because of a grand strategy. Like, I just don't. I think it was luck more than it was design. That's just my opinion.
It's the fact that he was going to go on loan to Burnley potentially before Chelsea signed him. I mean, that says everything you need to know. It's the fact that if he hadn't said, I want to leave permanently, I don't want to go on loan again, he would have ended up at Burnley. McAtee, he would have been in McAtee's shoes, right? So we wouldn't have seen the Cole Palmer that we have. But I mean, it's the fact that when we talk about those previous windows, right, I think about the window we signed Matic, he came in, instant impact in that January window.
That's a peak January signing. Olivier Giroud, 2018, yeah, that was a peak January signing.
Yeah, but these are players that come in and have instant impact. That's what you need in these windows, right? It's basics. And they're going to claim Trevor Chalobah coming back as one of their master strokes. Because they will. Because they already have. Wasn't it great? Wasn't it a master stroke? Yet they're still already turning around and going, he can leave in the summer, potentially. When we all know, realistically, he's going to be Chelsea's probably... He probably will be Chelsea's best centre-back for the rest of the season.
Again, even though he was not at the club for half a season.
Again, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I am very much in a mindset where I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of the inept culture which is being cultivated. I'm tired of them being babied for their continuous mistakes. I'm tired of seeing very simple strategies not being followed, all for the sake of this greater vision, which we already know is not going to work, because there's been history and proven track records of that throughout football. I am at my wit's end with it, Dan. And when I don't sit here and I don't say I could do a better job lightly, because that's a ridiculous statement 9 times out of 10. But I genuinely believe that. Not because I've just, you know, got Imperial Wharf moving again, you know. You know, Sunday League is, you know, it's nothing on what these guys do. But I wouldn't trust these two with signing players for me. I wouldn't. If they came to me and said, we've got this, I'd no, go away. I'm not listening to you. Wouldn't trust them as far as I throw them. Because they've not done anything to prove why we should. Why should we trust them? Oh, Enzo Fernandez. Oh, Moises Caicedo. Yeah, they're looking better now. But now it's a case of you want to make them even better. You want to strengthen. You do the basics. Sometimes with the assets that you have, you've got to bring in someone that's a depreciating asset to make it better. They should look at it as building a house, right? That's probably what they're going to look at it as. They've got all the foundations in of all the nice stuff they want. Do you know what? Sometimes you've got to paint the wall with something a little bit cheaper, because it make everything else a bit better. Maybe don't go to Farrow and Ball to get your paint. Go to Dulux. Get home base own brand, because it might look nicer and it might bring everything together better. I have no trust. I have no faith in what these guys are trying to deliver. Zero.
Well, we can, you know, whatever we think about what the overall point and strategy is, and for people who have, you know, come back at me when I've said it on my show, or you know, same the feedback you get where people say you're being really unfair, you know, usual stuff, you only care about academy players. Let's just simplify it. And we've said it consistently. I don't know how you counter argue this, just based on if we just look at the facts rather than what people, you know, smears and kind of we're not real fans and all of that crap that gets thrown out all the time. They asked for 4 windows. And when you look at the squad, goalkeeper is a major issue. They had to recall someone they tried to bomb out because they realised he was a better option, which we all could have predicted. The midfield is completely shallow. Lavia can't play more than 2 games before breaking down. Another thing you could have predicted in the summer. We've got wingers who on their day can be pretty impressive and can show bright signs, but like we don't have a load of goals from wide areas. We've got a striker who, again, I'm more positive than negative about, but has lost his finishing touch over the past month and has no quality backup. We've frozen out Christopher Nkunku, who could offer that. They've had 4 windows, and for the money they've spent, which has not been insignificant, there shouldn't be this many flaws within the squad. There shouldn't be so many areas that just don't make sense. That is just logical. That is fair. That's not being unfair. And I think whenever I get, you know, from people who I respect and people who I know do a lot of great work who try and spin it and claim people are being really unfair and they just want to be negative no matter what, like maybe those people are there and maybe they do have bad faith and maybe some people just want to always be negative for the sake of being negative. I'll grant you that some people are like that. But that is getting away from the actual reality of what Chelsea currently are. And if you, my issue really isn't with the sporting directors. I think it's the people who've shielded them and tried to, word I use consistently, I probably should stop using it because it's constantly used, but, you know, gaslight about this stuff. And it's why it's probably got to this stage and it has become more febrile and more hostile towards them, because people just refuse to accept genuine criticism, and that's what it is. Like, if you can come to me with something, and again, the counter argument is, well, you know, if Chelsea would have done this or that, you know, people would have come back negatively. So if Chelsea would have gone for Delap in the summer, people would have been arguing it's not an experienced centre forward. Fair enough, some people would have argued that. Maybe we would have argued that. However, and this is however, if you would have signed Delap and he would have turned out to be a good centre forward, you know what people would be saying? No, they'd be saying, fair play, you've signed us a good backup option who's provided depth to Nicholas Jackson. That's what people would likely be saying if it turned out. Rather than, let's just not sign the player, and then 6 months later, we haven't got good goal-scoring options, and then people are entitled to argue about that. So because people would argue against your targets that would maybe make the squad better, what, we don't go for those targets? I just, logically, these people are paid a lot of money. These people are not paid pittance to do this job. And I think if people in their bedrooms and their home studios can make points that I, you know, both of us made points that have come to fruition very quickly and said that's going to be a problem in a couple months, and it's turned out to be a problem, it means they're not doing something great. They're not great geniuses.
That's it. That's simply how it is. And it's a joke that it's the fact that you and I can sit here and say this is a problem and it comes to fruition is an embarrassment. I should not be spotting that. You should not be spotting that. People on Twitter should not be spotting these issues. That's what makes it so embarrassing. Because we are not people who work for Chelsea Football Club. We are not people who work in the industry as transfer gurus or sporting director gurus. We have, supposedly, in comparison to these guys, a very basic knowledge of the game. I think there's clearly a very political thing going on at Chelsea. That's genuinely all I think it boils down to 99% of the time. Robert Sanchez is a great example. The sporting director is another. It's just playing the politics game. And I'm sorry, it needs to be resolved. If Chelsea are actually going to push on, if these guys who invested in the club, in Clear Lake Capital, in Todd Boehly, if they want to see a return, which is clearly what Clear Lake are here for, actually make investments in the correct places. Because winning brings you so much more money than losing does, or being remarkably average. And that's a fact. But we will leave it there. Obviously, this would normally be the first section of the show, and this would sort of sit at the front end of the preview, but we just realised we have gone on for about 30-odd minutes here. So what we're going to do is we'll release this one independently, so you can obviously tune in and get involved with that and just talk transfers with us. And if you want to obviously stick around, you can stay for the City preview. That'll be out as a part two. So we will see you in the next bit for the Manchester City preview. If you're not sticking around, make sure you give us a 5-star review if you've enjoyed it. And if you haven't enjoyed it, because we've been very negative, tough shit. We'll see you later.